Welcome to the Aquariumax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 28, recorded April 13th, 2010.
Buonasera a tutti gli ascoltatori!
Hello, everybody!
Yeah, literally, good evening to all the listeners. But that's okay, it's basically the same thing. We have some good news. You can now call us and leave a message, a voice message. We have a dedicated number, thanks to Google Voice. And the number is, are you ready for this? 801-477-0629. I'll read that again. Or you can just rewind it if you want, but I'm going to read it again anyway. 801-477-0629.
So, if you want to call us and ask a question or leave a comment, you can do that and we will answer it on the show and maybe we'll play your message on the show too.
Unless it's an inordinately ridiculous comment or something like that, then we may not. But in general, we will attempt to do so. So there's some good news. And here's just a little tip for you. Now, I don't claim to have invented this, but I think I did. Maybe I got it from somewhere else, I don't know. But as far as I know, I invented it. But if someone else did, I'm not trying to steal it. I just forgot. Okay. If those of you who have a worm cone have ever noticed that some worms fit in it and others don't. For example, grindleworms fit in a worm cone fairly well. But microworms just float right out. You can take a piece of filter pad and sort of line the worm cone with the filter pad. And then you can put microworms in it. And there's sort of a time-release microworm thing going on there. It's kind of nice. And it also works the same way for grindleworms, because grindleworms actually, you know, the worm cone keeps them from all coming out at once, but just the worm cone by itself still allows them to go pretty quickly, especially if you've got angelfish or something that just yanked them out. So try some of that, and it'll make your worms a little bit more time-released. So that's a cool thing. And another thing, if you haven't seen a picture of an assassin snail eating a Malaysian trumpet snail. I now have one that I'm going to be putting on the resources page for the Assassin Snails podcast. So check that out if you would like to. I mean, if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Well, be warned, it is a little bit creepy because it's just like the Dementors from Harry Potter. He's just like sucking this head snail out of its shell.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little creepy.
It was kind of neat, though. That it's, you know, it's working. I also noticed something really kind of nice about the assassin snails. I had read that they ate hydra, but I didn't know if that was true or not. But this is just an anecdotal report, of course. But in a tank into which I have put assassin snails, I no longer see any hydra. At one time I saw a number of them on the glass because I fed microworms to that tank frequently. And the hydra like microworms, but I don't see any anymore in that tank. I also did another experiment, not a very controlled experiment, but just sort of a general one. I put one assassin snail into a 20-gallon tank with a number of pond snails and ram's horn snails. There are very few in there, and I've had to add several to keep that one assassin snail fed, so that it's working pretty well. One assassin snail is enough to keep those snails a very low population rate. I have other tanks with no assassin snails that are a very manageable snail level, because generally if you can keep, you know, the water parameters at a good level and you can keep the nutrient levels fairly low, then snails keep the population fairly low. But this other tank was one where I was raising baby bristle noses, feeding them, you know, algae chips and bits of zucchini and green beans and peas and things that snails eat. So typically there were a lot of snails there. But the assassin snails seems to be able to keep them under control. And to be fair, I don't have as many bristle noses in there anymore. I sold most of them. Just there's maybe half a dozen in there. But anyway, a couple of observations about assassin snails. Now, we're going to get down to the meat, so to speak, of the show, which is...
We are going to tell you some of our experiences in Hawaii.
Where we lived. For 3 years.
Jinx.
Experiences relating to fish, of course.
Yes, not just random experiences.
Like cockroaches and going shopping and
because
that
some
sort of
things
thing.
Don't need to be revisited.
Right. But we're going to talk to you about fish in Hawaii specifically. First, we'll talk to you about freshwater fish in Hawaii. We had a friend who was a marine biologist, actually, out there, and he brought us to two facilities. One was a saltwater facility, and the other one was a freshwater aquaculture facility. And they were fun places to visit. We got to see things like swordtails and things being raised outside, as well as much larger fish in the freshwater facility. And in the saltwater facility, we got to see things like feather duster worms and tuna, sharks. That was fun.
They had a touch tank.
Yeah, so it was a very enjoyable experience. But to talk about freshwater specifically, tilapia lived in the storm drains. That was kind of amusing. Tilapia in the storm drains. One day we were walking to the store, looked down in the storm drain, and saw tilapia swimming around, so that was interesting. Things like swordtails and weather loaches can also be found in the streams and ditches there. Taiwan blue shrimp, which are the same species as red cherry shrimp, are found in profusion in many of the waterways there. The tilapia have even found their way into saltwater in some of the areas and are breeding there too, so they're pretty resilient, as you might guess. What else as far as freshwater goes? In the pet store, when we moved to Hawaii, this was some years ago, that was the first place we ever saw half-moon bettas in real life. They had all different kinds of bettas at the time when they weren't nearly as common in the pet stores as they are now. That was interesting. The pet stores typically have really good prices on the fish, too. Some of them, because they're raised locally. Bristlenose Plecos, for example, one of the pet stores that we went to sometimes, they would just go pull them out of a local stream. They were all over the place in the stream, and there were quite a few places where you could find cichlids and many other aquarium fish in the streams. Not that we're condoning this. I mean, it's not a good thing that these non-native species were introduced there. It was interesting, not good, but interesting. Ecologically irresponsible on the part of someone in the past. It's still, you know, kind of interesting to note. But other than that, oh, by the way, koi are a huge thing in Hawaii.
We went to a koi festival once.
Yeah, we went to a koi and goldfish festival once. There are many places where there are huge koi. The Honolulu Airport has a little garden area with koi that are how big?
They were bigger than some of our kids at the time.
Yeah.
They were huge.
They were very, very large. They do very, very well in Hawaii. And so that's an interesting thing to check out. If you're going to a big garden with a pond in it, there are likely to be some very interesting koi, very large ones. So freshwater. There are many other things we could say, but we're going to stop now and move to saltwater. So we're going to start out just talking a little bit about some of our favorite fish. There's no way we could talk about all the fish that we saw in Hawaii, of course. But we snorkeled a lot. Snorkeling in Hawaii is one of the few sort of activities that you can do. What would you call? Few recreational activities you can do in Hawaii that don't cost a whole lot.
Yeah.
Besides going to the beach. But of course, we've always been interested in that sort of thing anyway. So We soon obtained some snorkeling gear, which, by the way, you can buy at any supermarket. And for maybe, what, $30, you can get yourself a decent set of fins. Not great, but sufficient, decent set that will work for you. And a good snorkel with a nice valve, a purge valve on it. You want one with a purge valve, believe me, because the waves crash over you and then you get a mouthful of water and you need to be able to get it out. So get one with a purge valve. There you go. The first one we'll talk about is the Hawaiian cleaner wrasse. This is similar to many other cleaner wrasses you might be familiar with, but this species is only found in Hawaii, and this was fun to see. We saw some juveniles, which are kind of a, what would you say, that's a purple?
It's blue.
It's blue. Kind of a blue color. I'm partially colorblind, so that's kind of an issue for me. Anyway, black with blue stripes on it, and when they get older, they have what color?
Yellow.
They have yellow stripes in the front of the body.
The blue, there's more of the blue that's on the on the top.
The dorsal area
and underneath, and then the black is mostly just in the middle on the fins.
Yeah, and
the tail.
We actually got to see these in action sometimes. I remember once in Hanauma Bay seeing one of these lined up with some other fish doing its cleaning thing going on. It was pretty cool. I got to see cleaner wrasses several times, but that's the only time I ever saw the cleaning station in action. And that was at Hanauma Bay. That's a highly recommended snorkeling spot if you're ever on the island of Oahu.
It's also a very busy tourist spot, so if you go, try to get there earlier in the day as soon as it opens.
Yes, so you can find parking.
It fills up fast.
It does.
They have a limit on how many people can go in at once.
So you do need to start early. And it takes a while to get there, depending on where you're from. Of course, we were at the part of the island that was exactly the furthest away from every other point on the island, pretty much. So
we liked to quote Luke Skywalker, paraphrase him a little bit. If there's a bright spot to the island of Oahu, we're on the point that is farthest from.
Yeah. Anyway, there were some cool things around us, but a lot of things like this were pretty far away. Anyway, those were fun. We liked how the Hawaiian cleaner wrasses. And now Kelly's going to tell you about one of her favorite fish.
I liked the rainbow wrasses. They're also called yellowtail chorus. The interesting thing about the rainbow wrasses is they have three different stages, which are very, they're each unique stages. They look different, like almost like completely different fish in each stage. The juvenile one is the one that we saw first, and it almost looks like kind of an elongated, more torpedo-shaped clownfish. It has an orange body with the white bars on it, and then when it gets a little bit older, it looks completely and totally different. It's got a bright yellow tail and kind of a darker, almost olive green body with like neon fluorescent blue spots on it, and orange fins with blue spots on it, and kind of a white face. And then when it's even older, it's closer to the second stage, but it's just more muted, darker. So it's a very interesting fish.
Yeah, and we saw that fish fairly frequently, so it was kind of a fun one. Almost hard to believe that it exists color-wise, sort of like the peacock of the sea, in a way.
Mm-hmm. It's very bright.
Yeah. And one of the very first fish that I ever saw, and I think the first one I ever identified when I went swimming, it was kind of a fun story. We had been in Hawaii for about a month, hadn't been snorkeling yet. We got a snorkeling set for your young son, and we were trying to show him how to use it. Of course, we wouldn't have him go out in the deep water, but we were going to just have him in the very shallow parts and try to use it out. And he was not sure how to do it, so I put his snorkeling set on. He didn't have any fins, but just the mask and the snorkel, and went out maybe 10 or 15 feet, and I was very surprised. I didn't figure to see a whole lot that close to shore, but I saw a lot of fish, and a lot of brightly colored fish. I was flabbergasted, really, by just how amazingly beautiful they were and how close. And one of them was the Humuhumu Nuku Nuku Apua'a, which is the fish with the second longest Hawaiian name of all the fish in Hawaii. And it means trigger fish with a nose like a pig. And it's recognizable by the greenish V-shape on its rear half and by its pig-like face. They were everywhere. Everywhere we went, we would see the Humuhumu Nuku Nuku Apua'a.
It was kind of the state fish, actually.
Yes. For a while, it was the official state fish, and then it lost its official status, and nobody really noticed, and so everybody thought it was the state fish for a long time, and then finally they reinstated it as the state fish.
Yeah. So either official or unofficial.
So yeah.
If you ask somebody, they will tell you that's what it is.
Yeah, and it's one of the most fun names to say. We will actually tell you about the fish with the longest name, but we're not quite there yet. Now we're going to talk about another of Kelly's favorites.
Moorish idols. These, I think, were my favorite to see snorkeling just because they were very graceful and peaceful looking. They have almost kind of an angelfish-shaped body with the wide black and yellow bars alternating and kind of a long filament coming off of their dorsal fin. filament's the right word. Does that work?
You can say that. Okay. Yeah, it's a filament, or you could say a filamentous dorsal fin.
Filamentous. Yeah. That was close.
Yeah, that works. What you said works.
But they were always kind of graceful and mysterious and beautiful, so they were my favorite.
Yes, and we would see them quite often, and generally by themselves, but sometimes in small groups as well. Now, one of the most common fish ever was the manini, or the convict tang, as it's known in English. But in Hawaiian, it's called the manini, and manini refers both to this fish and also to something that's not very big or not very important. In the local lingo, if something isn't very important, people say, oh, that's just manini. It doesn't matter. Partly because these fish were so common and not very big that when people would catch them, you know, oh, well, you didn't do all that well going fishing. You just got manini. You didn't get anything very important. And like I said, they were very, very common. They have kind of dark bars alternating with wider white bars. And at Hanama Bay, I happened upon a school of these that just had hundreds of them, and I thought, oh, wow, I feel like Jacques Cousteau. And I'm just snorkeling, but I was snorkeling in about 30 feet of water, and I felt just like him. There were these huge coral heads everywhere, and schools of hundreds of fish going right by me, and the cleaner wrasses, and wow, it was amazing. So that's a fish that you can expect to see if you ever go to Hawaii. And one of the biggest fish we ever saw was the parrotfish. Now, the parrotfish, it's hard to say exactly how big they were, partly because water magnifies things, but it seemed like they were about 2 feet long.
A couple feet.
Maybe longer than 2 feet. They seemed like they were bigger than that.
And they seemed like fairly massive fish. They weren't just like long and skinny like some. They were...
No, they're very...
They were pretty big fish all the way around.
Yeah, they're built a little bit like a frontosa, for those of you who are familiar with, you know, some of the rift-like cichlids. They have sort of a nuchal hump almost, not quite as pronounced as a frontosa's, but that sort of shape to their head. And they have this immense beak that rips coral heads to bits. And they're searching for the algae and so on in there. And they crunch it up, and their beaks look quite impressive and rather
scary.
That
actually helps make sand.
Yeah, some of the beaches that we frequented were almost entirely made of parrotfish feces, just bits of coral left over from that. So, very
active fish.
Just
try not to think about too much when you're sitting on the beach.
Well, it's only the coral bits that are left over by the time we're sitting on it, pretty much. Anyway. Speaking of other large fish, moray eels.
Creepy. Cool, but creepy.
Well, we would see these once in a while. What we figured out we probably saw most of the time was the undulated moray and the white mouth moray. I think once I saw a yellow head moray, which we may talk about a little later. But typically you could find them... Oh, we did see snowflake morays too. Once we went to a place called Turtle Bay, and they had tide pools there, and we were looking at a tide pool, and we saw two or three really small moray eels. I think they were young snowflake eels, probably about 6 inches long, and we watched those for a while, and that was kind of fun. But we did see some larger morays as well. I think the biggest one I ever saw was about 3 feet. That was night diving. Maybe we'll talk more about that later. We never saw sharks while we were swimming.
Happy day.
We saw sharks from when we were on the whale watching tour. We saw some that were surrounding a shark tour boat. We saw some when we were on at the marine research facility in a lagoon that they had fenced off to keep the sharks in. But we never saw sharks while we were swimming.
Which is just fine.
Probably just fine, yes.
Yeah, he says probably. I say yes. It's just fine.
The fish with the longest Hawaiian name is the Lau Vili Vili Nuku Nuku Oi Oi, which means the butterfly fish with a long nose. And this is a fairly famous fish. You'll probably recognize it if you see it. It's mostly yellow, and it has a very long jaw structure, long thin jaw structure there. We do have a picture of that on the resources page, along with the Humu Humu Nuku Nuku Apua'a, the Moorish Idol, and several other species that we encountered, although the photos there are mine. I did take them, but I took them, at least I think most of the ones that are on there are ones that I took at Sea Life Park on Oahu. I did take pictures.
Is it Sea Life Park or was it the Waikiki Aquarium?
Well, some might be the Waikiki Aquarium, but I think most of them are Sea Life Park of those.
Which
pictures.
Are two cool places you should go if you go to Oahu.
Yeah, they're fun places to go. Because the pictures that I took underwater myself, most of them, didn't turn out terribly great because I just used those cheap cameras that you buy. Disposable cameras in a plastic
cameras.
Shell.
Since you obviously can't take your digital camera underwater unless you have an amazingly cool digital camera.
Well, or unless you have one of those shells you can get for it. But
and you want to trust your
camera
several hundred dollar camera to the little plastic shell surrounded
which,
by salt water.
We never tried. We didn't want to try.
The lighting isn't all that good for picture taking under the water, so it's
right.
hard to get good pictures.
I think I do have a picture or two that I took under there, but I just wanted you to see some of the fish that we saw, and so I put the pictures that I took at Sea Life Park and so on. And that's just my disclaimer. In the picture with the cleaner wrasse and the yellow tang, and there's a threadfin butterfly fish under it, you can see scratches in the acrylic in the tank. It's an outdoor tank, but you can see that, and that's why. I just wanted to let you know so you didn't think I was trying to pull one over on you, because I'm not. I took those in an aquarium, but not my own aquarium. Okay. Another one of my favorites was the spotted box fish. You could see the females and the males. The males had this blue all along their sides, starting at their mouth and going all the way back into their caudal fin. And then they had black body with white spots on it everywhere else. And the females were just a black body with white spots, but both of them were fun. They move around a lot like puffer fish, and they're just very interesting.
Do they puff up?
I don't think they do, because their body is much too rigid.
They're just kind of squarish or rectangular shaped.
Yeah, they're almost rectangular, and that's why they're called boxfish. And they have sort of little cells of hard tissue that surrounds them. It's kind of an armor. And so they can't puff up, but they look very interesting. Very interesting creatures. Well, I think we're about ready to move on to the night diving. Once I had some friends who would go diving often. I would go with them once in a while. They typically would go to collect things to eat, and I didn't want to do that. But I would accompany them on occasion just to see the wildlife that they saw as they were doing that. They would often go to catch octopus, so we saw quite a few of those. Those are very interesting. You can just see the intelligence in their eyes as they look at you. And
yeah, it was kind of sad they were going to get eaten.
Yeah, it was kind of sad, in my opinion, too, that they were going
to
get eaten.
To see them.
But it was interesting to see them. And once we decided to go night diving, that was interesting.
Well Russ went
I
night
went
diving.
With
I have issues
with,
friends. With dark water.
And that's where I saw, at one point, this moray with about 2 feet of moray sticking out of the rock, and it was kind of gulping, its mouth was opening and closing slowly, and
generally
I was
looking
menacing. And I was wondering how much moray was left on the other side. It, of course, we didn't approach it too closely, and I'm sure it wouldn't have done anything unless we had provoked it, but it was interesting to see. There were slipper lobsters, not true lobsters, but they looked something like a lobster with a very flat, flattened claw or chelipede, and they're smaller than you think of lobsters being, and apparently they're good to eat, and they collected those a lot. Well, they would dive. We happened upon a turtle, sea turtle. You're not supposed to touch them, and I didn't touch it. In fact, I rather regret that we inadvertently disturbed it as it was sleeping, because that can be dangerous. They can actually get disoriented if you wake them up at night and end up being preyed on by sharks, which is one of their most feared predators. We have a picture of one that we took during the daytime out on a beach that we knew of, that we would visit fairly often.
Where
you
put that
could
up on
see
the resources.
Yeah, we'll put the picture up. And you could see them almost all the time just out on the sand. And so we've got a picture of that. And I think I have a picture of one that we took in the water. It was fun, especially at places like Waimea Bay, You could watch the surf come up, and sometimes you could see right through the waves and see turtles just swimming around in the waves as they lifted up, and that was fun to see. Another thing.
I saw dolphins once at Waimea.
Once we saw a dolphin jumping there. We would see humpback whales, usually in the winter.
Russ would see them. They would always come up when I had to look away to do something with the kids, and then he would say, "Oh, look, there it is," and I turned back and it was gone. Sometimes I think he was teasing me.
But I wasn't. and then we went on a whale watching tour for our anniversary. And
that was fun.
That time, we went on it on a sailboat near Haleiwa, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was off of Haleiwa. And we went on the sailboat for about an hour and a half or 2 hours or something. And at one point, a whale, humpback whale, came up on one side of the boat, went under our boat, came back up on the other side, and then had a calf with it. And we got to see that.
That
and
was
Kelly
neat.
Did get to see that.
I did get to see that one.
So that was cool. But we would also see them breaching and coming up for air and expelling vapor from their blowholes and so on. But she didn't get to see a whole lot of that when they would breach, which was kind of sad. But I guess it's partly, too, because my eyesight is a little bit sharper.
That's
probably
true.
Some of it. Let's see. Oh, once at Waimea Bay, I went out and went around this particular rock. There was a lot of wildlife. It was sort of the threshold for depth and so on, where you'd find there was a little school of damselfish that lived around this particular rock that were almost always there. And you'd go past the rock and you'd see things like porcupine fish and all kinds of crazy stuff on the other side of the rock.
We have some trumpet fish over there.
Yeah, trumpet fish and all kinds of fun stuff. But once I went around the rock and I found myself in a school of Hawaiian cuttlefish, which, you know, look like little squid, basically. And it looked like they were doing synchronized swimming because they were all at roughly, it was like they were in a grid, just suspended in this grid, and they were all moving their legs in synchrony, it seemed like. It was really bizarre. And luckily, I had the camera, and I took a few pictures. They didn't come out very clearly, and you could only get one or two in each shot. But that was a very fascinating experience. It was probably the closest I will ever be to being surrounded by alien life forms. At least the closest I ever expect to be. It was very bizarre, but very interesting. I'll never forget that. Let's see. What else? We once came upon a Hawaiian monk seal at the beach. Those were pretty rare.
Right within a few months of moving there, even.
I think it was February, so we'd been there about six months or so.
Yeah.
And it was a holiday. It was like Martin Luther King Day or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Or is it President's Day? I never remember which one's in February and which one's in January. It was one. It was either Martin Luther King Day or it was President's Day. One of those two. And we went to the beach, and it was kind of raining, and it didn't look that exciting. But then we saw this large object, and we thought, oh, did someone leave a big black trash can over there? But as we got closer to it, it turned out to be this big Hawaiian monk seal just sitting on the beach. And we didn't get too close, and you shouldn't, because they have very sharp teeth and they're capable of using
them. They're big!
Yeah, and they're quite large. But and we didn't have our camera with us, unfortunately. But I did get some pictures of them later. I do have some pictures of Hawaiian monk seals that I took later, so maybe I'll put one of those up too. That was an interesting experience we had at the beach. Probably, besides the moray eels, and what else is scary there? We're going to have
some
a
barracudas.
Little part. Yeah, we did see barracudas, only baby ones, though. The biggest barracuda I ever saw was probably a little over a foot long, so not too much of a danger, but we did see those. There is a venomous type of sea urchin, highly venomous sea urchin, couple of them in Hawaii, and I did see a couple of those. You have to be careful where you step.
In
tide pools and things. Did see a number of those. But in general, it's just a really fun place to go. We didn't even really scratch the surface of all the different kinds of fish and wildlife that there are to see there. But if you ever have a chance to go, highly recommend that you do. It was a lot of fun. We have some great memories of snorkeling there. And it's something you do for not a whole lot of money.
Should we tell them where to find the best smoothie on Oahu?
Sure.
Or is that a no-no?
No, you can tell them that
if
you want.
This is the other thing. There's this place on the North Shore called Shark's Cove. It's got great tide pools and everything in it. But across the street from it is a little, it's almost like a trailer that they built, kind of a restaurant, called Shark's Cove Grill, and they have the yummiest peanut butter banana smoothies. So go snorkeling and then go get a smoothie. That's what we used to do.
Yeah, we would do that often. So if you ever manage to get to Oahu, enjoy it. And remember to call the number. I've put it on the closing remarks on the recording, so the number will repeat again. Give us a call if you have any comments or questions that you'd like us to address on the show. And
good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.